You're listening to The Christian Commute, a commute-length podcast about Christian apologetics, theology, and other items of Christian interest. Now, broadcasting from an undisclosed location, from the highways and byways, here is your host, Seth Dunn.
It's Thursday, December 22nd, and The Christian Commute is back. You were riding along with your host, Seth Dunn, on the way to Moe's Southwest Grill. Southwest Grill, did I say that right? Is it a grill? I don't know. I'm going to get a burrito. I'm going to get a Joey Jr. That's what I get. You're on the way to Moe's with your host, Seth Dunn. I'm going to go eat with my wife. My wife wanted to date with me. Imagine that. A little quality time with the old hubby while my kids are at my parents' house. I am back from my Christmas travels. I've been to Murfreesboro, I've been to Huntsville, and now I am back at work. I'm out of vacation days, but my plant's about to shut down. This is the third to last Christian Commute for the year. I'll be recording, Lord willing, a Christian Commute tomorrow. And then on the 30th, I have to come in to work. Technically, I could work from home, but I'm going to come in because if I work from home, my kids will waller all over me and won't let me get anything done. And my wife will be like, hey, can you come up here and help me with this task for a minute? And I'll be like, no, Laura, I'm at work. You treat me like I'm at work. I can't be interrupted with these things. It's like I'm at the office. But then I'll goof off for 5 minutes. She'll be like, I thought you were at work. So it's just safe that I drive into work, which is good for the wonderful, wonderful audience of The Christian Commute, because you get a show. Today's show is about canceling church for Christmas. We're going to get to that show topic after we look at the question in the Christian Commute inbox about modesty. And we'll get to the Christian Commute inbox after we do today's Bible chapter review. Today's Bible chapter review is going to be 1 Corinthians 11, verses 4 through 10. 1 Corinthians 11, verses 4 through 10. And keep in mind in the background as we talk about what this verse means, the order of creation. The order of creation. And I don't mean the order as in what happened first. You know, let there be light, then the sun, moon, and stars, and then the water, and then the earth, and then the birds and fish, and then the animals and the cows, and then the people. I'm not talking about day one, day two, day three, day four, day five. That's not what I'm talking about when I say order of creation. By order of creation, I mean the authority, the order, as in who's in charge, like general, colonel, captain, lieutenant, like that kind of order, if you will. Order of creation. And let's just get down to it, complementarians. Men are in charge. Men are in charge. Adam was in charge in the Garden of Eden. He was given a wife, and he was in charge of her. So that's what I'm talking about when I say order of creation. All right. We are distinctly male and female. That means something. It means something in terms of authority. It means something in terms of gender and sexuality. There are standards for men and standards for women. So Paul tells the Corinthians that a man doesn't need to pray or prophesy with his head covered. What in the world does that mean? Well, in the Corinthian culture, his head being covered would be him dressing effeminately, okay? Wearing a veil, if you will. Whatever the culture of how women covered their head in Corinth in the ancient days, whatever marked someone as a woman, like how a woman would dress. Like in modern times, a man would wear pants, a woman would wear a dress, for example. Like, if you're a man, don't wear a dress while you're prophesying and praying. Here's an example. Who saw the Pentatonics Christmas special on NBC? Was it Friday night or Saturday night? My mother-in-law likes Pentatonics, so my brother-in-law gave her the Pentatonix's Christmas album for Christmas. And then it just so happened that they were having a Christmas special on NBC. And they got on there and they sang Christmas songs, secular songs and religious songs, like "O Come Let Us Adore Him," for example. And some of you are saying, "I've never heard of Pentatonix." I'd never heard of them either, because I don't really watch TV. But they're an a cappella group. It's five people, and they sing, and they're really good singers. So they're singing all these Christmas songs a cappella. And I'm looking at these dudes, or two of them on there at least, and I'm like, these guys are queers. I'm pretty sure they're gay. And they're sitting there singing these very religious songs. And there's one scene where the guys go in to sing a song with Dolly Parton. And no joke, one of the guys is like wearing a dress. And I really think this verse fits. Don't go sing a Christmas song about how you adore Jesus or "Joy to the world, the Lord has come, let earth receive her king." And you're dressed like a woman. Now, is that praying or prophesying? No, but it's theoretically expressing worship. Now, I think it's a lost person. He's not really expressing worship. But when you're praying or prophesying, when you're praying, you're speaking to God. And when you're prophesying, you're speaking to men about God, men and women. So be a man if you're a man. Look like a man. Carry yourself as a man before God and others. This, by the way, this isn't talking about how to dress at church. You know, a man should have his head uncovered and a woman should have her head covered. This is not how to dress at church. This is about how to dress all the time. Okay. How to carry yourself in any public place, I should say. So, a man, Paul says, should not pray or prophesy with his head uncovered. Read that, looking like a woman. Conversely, a woman should not pray or prophesy with her head uncovered. Right, her head uncovered. Okay, so it doesn't mean wearing a church hat. Like, who has any black people at their church? Okay, I don't have any black people at my church. I've never seen one. But at a former church, we had two, and these ladies always wore hats. That's a big part of black church culture, is coming in wearing a hat, dressed very nicely. It's a compliment to how seriously they take church, and the women wear hats. And not as any kind of church anthropologist or sociologist, but I believe that may have something to do with a woman having her head covered. There's a lot of fundamentalist sects, like the women don't cut their hair. There's the Pratts, where I work in Calhoun in Gordon County, the Church of God Union Assembly, and the women won't cut their hair. It just grows way down, but they cover it up in a bun, and it's part of them saying, we're trying to keep our heads covered. Now, I think they're applying the verse wrong, but their heart, at least, is in the right place, I'd say. I'm not recommending the Pratts, by the way, as one of these kind of over-the-top fundamentalist sects. But don't look like a man. So think of a man who has long hair, a long effeminate hair, and you know he's constantly brushing it back. You guys can't see me in my car, but I just shook my head and brushed my hair back in a very effeminate way. Or you think of a woman who has what you'd call a butch mannish haircut. I think that was what it would be like in our culture. Don't try to look like a man. So a woman should not pray or prophesy dressed like a man. And Paul says, you know, if she's praying or prophesies with her head uncovered, she might as well shave her head. Now, what in the world does that mean? Well, in Corinthian culture, that's how prostitutes looked. Prostitutes might shave their head. So butch women who rejected the authority of man, and I'm not trying to use an anachronism, because if you went to Corinth in like 50 AD and said, started talking about a butch woman, they wouldn't know what you're talking about. And I'm not necessarily talking about a lesbian. I'm not necessarily talking about a hefty, short-haired girl who's very good at softball but is a heterosexual. But y'all know what I mean by a butch woman. This is a Baptist podcast. If you said this on NPR, you'd get boycotted. I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh. It's serious material. I just imagine like a lost person or a modern American secular feminist listening to this, I'm like, oh my gosh. But that's what the Bible says, all right? I'm talking about what the Bible says. So, yeah, woman, don't look like a butch. Don't shave your head with a butch haircut. If you don't have a symbol of authority on your head, because the man is the authority over the woman, if you don't have a symbol of authority over your head, why don't you just look like a prostitute? Or someone who rejects these gender roles. That's what Paul's saying. Paul says man is made in the image of God. Duh, we know that. In the image of God, he created them, male and female. That's what it says in Genesis. Paul basically says man is the image of God. And Paul says woman is the image of man. Now, that's not to say that women aren't made in the image of God. They are. But what he's getting at is the creation order. Now, we're talking about the order as far as first, then second. So not only are we talking about order in terms of authority, we're talking about order now in terms of temporal order. First, God made the man. So God made the man, Adam, and he says, all right, here's earth, take dominion of it, you're in charge here. And he starts naming all the animals, and he starts looking for a companion. We see this, I think this is Genesis chapter 2. And no suitable companion for the man could be found. So the Lord caused a deep sleep to come over the man, and he took a rib from the man, and out of the rib fashioned woman, fashioned Eve, okay? And he said, she shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man, all right? Women were made to be a helpmate for men. Why do women exist? So men can have wives. That's what the Bible teaches. That's what it says. Men and women complement one another. Paul's very clear. He says, woman was made from man, not the other way around. Woman actually comes from man. And, you know, from a naturalistic perspective, this doesn't make sense because women, or even a biological perspective, women are the ones that have a baby. So a woman has a baby and a man comes out. You might think, oh, well, see, I came from my mother's womb. Man comes from woman. No, the first woman came from the first man. And now, you know, women bear children because that's just how biology works. So a woman prophesying while looking like a man is just awful. It's completely out of order because she's under the authority of her husband, okay? Or if she's not married, she's under the authority of her father, like a young man might be, who's not an adult yet, would be under the authority of his father. So when you're out and about in the world representing God, praying and prophesying, men don't look like a woman, women don't look like a man, and understand that there's an order here. That the woman should have her head covered because that's a symbol of authority. We're all standing before God. So the man is standing before God. He's under God's authority. And the woman is standing before man under his authority, which comes from God. And the man's responsible before God to look after the woman. And the woman's responsible before God to submit to the authority of the man God has put in charge of her. Husbands, we're talking about now, moving on to a different part of Scripture. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Women, submit to your husband as unto the Lord. It's about authority. Don't mix genders. Don't gender bend. Here is a great modern day example. Go look up a picture of Miley Cyrus with her head partly shaved, okay? That is the perfect example of a sexually confused young woman who's not under the authority of a man and who kind of looks mannish because she has a men's haircut in our culture. It's like one of those things. Yes, culture and style changes. I understand that. But even when now it's become fashionable for a woman to shave part of her head, gross, no, that's mannish. That's a butch haircut. So maybe you know some hip woman at your Baptist church who has part of her head shaved. She looks butch. Maybe she's like the most submissive wife in the whole world. But she's, in my opinion, walking around with her head uncovered. So don't look like a butch. Men look like men. Women look like women. Whatever that looks like in your culture, don't forget to be masculine and feminine and respect their created order. Now let's move on to the SethDunn88@gmail.com, Christian Commute Inbox. Do you have a question about Christian apologetics, theology, or have a show topic suggestion? You can submit it to SethDunn88@gmail.com. SethDunn88@gmail.com. And from time to time, we'll have a contest in the inbox, and it usually involves a book giveaway. So let's have a contest today. The hardest decision that I had to make today was New York strip or ribeye. New York strip or ribeye. That was the hardest decision that I had to make today. I went to lunch at Longhorn with some work people for a little end of the year, Christmas time work getting together. It's very nice. So the first one to write in to the Christian Commute inbox, SethDunn88@gmail.com, and guess correctly of what kind of steak I ordered. And I made it simple. I could have thrown sirloin and filet in there or T-bone, but it really, those weren't even in the running. So I either want a New York strip or a ribeye. The first one to write in and guess correctly what kind of steak I ordered today, I will send you the book of your choice from any book that I've reviewed on my personal website or Pulpit and Pen. So here's how it works. You write in, you get the answer right. I say congratulations, you win. Go to gsethdunn.wordpress.com or Pulpit and Pen, find the book reviews, pick out whatever book you want, and I will send you that book. All right, so that's today's contest. All right. So yay, it's fun. End of the year, Christmas giveaway. It's the Christian Commute. You can also follow me on Twitter, @gsethdunn. Don't forget to like the Christian Commute Facebook page. Today's question comes from Nikki in California. Nikki in California. Her head is covered. I think she has red hair, if I remember her Google picture correctly. So Nikki is writing in. She actually wrote in a long time ago when we first started Corinthians to ask about modesty at church, right? So the first thing she says, could you research the writings of the church fathers and see what they say? No, Nikki, I'm not going to do that. That's not how the Christian Commute works. That would require me to research something. This is a show based on what knowledge I have. Every once in a while, I'll look something up or look up a commentary. I had to look up a commentary for 1 Corinthians 11 today to make sure I did it right. But I'm really not exactly concerned with what the church fathers have to say about modesty in a specific sense about what you should wear at church, because culture changes with haircuts and dress. As far as modesty goes, you should not wear something that's sexually alluring to church, whatever that is, or distracting to church. And I think that goes from down through the ages. So whatever Tertullian or whoever thinks is immodest at church in his day, I'm not necessarily interested in his commentary. And by the way, if some church father thinks 1 Corinthians 11 is about modesty at church, I just have to say, no, they're wrong. And I'm not one of these guys who's like, let's go to what the church fathers think. I like to go to what the church fathers say when it comes to canonicity or authorship of a biblical book, because they were closer to the events than we were. Right? But various opinions, mine are as good as they are. Theirs are, you know, as long as it's in a proper hermeneutic and taken in context. Now, obviously, the church fathers were closer to the culture of the biblical times, so they would be more familiar with the culture. So maybe they do have some insight there. But Nikki, I did look at the website you sent me. I just don't really have any comment on it. But Nikki has another question. How do I address modesty at church or in general with my daughters? My daughters are three, so I don't. Their mother and I dress them in whatever we tell them to wear. We usually send them to church in dresses, little cutesy church dresses. Okay, so we, you know, we're not at the point yet where we have to tell them, hey, dress modestly, or hey, stop taking your clothes off. Like my daughter Naomi, we weren't out somewhere. We get back home, and the first thing she does is just rips all her clothes off. Starts running around in her underwear. Same thing. We'll put clothes on her, take her down the street to her grandparents' house. She'll come in, off go the clothes. Her sister and her brother don't do that. I don't know why she does that. But eventually, we'll have to have a conversation with her. Hey, you can't just run around with no clothes on. But modesty at church is something that I have addressed with my wife. Now, my wife is a very modest person to begin with, so I don't have to tell her not to, you know, don't dress like that when she's walking out the door every day. I mean, she doesn't wear shorts, skirts, and low-cut shirts and stuff like that. She doesn't dress like a whore or some MTV whorelet. So how old am I? Oh, the people on them women on the MTV is a bunch of whorelets, a bunch of worldlings. My wife doesn't dress like that. Yes, I was born an old fuddy-duddy. I've been a fundamentalist Baptist from the church nursery. That's where they put me. The MTV is evil. It's the MTV with a definite article, right? All the worldliness on TV. But no, my wife is generally very modest. So rarely do I have to say, hey, maybe change clothes. Don't do that. We used to go to a church where it was acceptable to wear jeans. Now let me make a point. If somebody walks into my current church wearing jeans, nobody's going to kick them out or make them feel bad. We have people who come to church in jeans all the time. That's how they want to dress. That's how they want to dress. But the preacher preaches in a suit and tie, and the associate pastor dresses nicely, and the music master, he's wearing slacks, right, the button-up shirt. But we were at a church where the preacher dressed in jeans. I don't think preachers should dress in jeans. I don't have chapter and verse for that, but you won't find me preaching in jeans on Sunday morning. I've preached a couple times, and I wore dress pants. That's just how I roll, man. Anyway, so it was appropriate to dress casually at that church, so sometimes we dress casually. And if my wife would want to wear a tank top to church, I'd say, no, you can't wear a tank top to church unless you put a sweater on over it or a little jacket. Don't wear a tank top to church. You have to wear sleeves. Now, I can't go chapter and verse and say that, find where it says, thou shalt wear sleeves to church. But that's my standard for modesty. You know, don't be distracting to the young boys there. There was a, I don't know if I've told this story before, but there was a attractive, I was going to say handsome woman, but that would be insulting. Nobody wants to be called a handsome woman. There was a pretty girl, woman, I don't know, she's like 22 years old. And she was on the quote-unquote praise team at this Jeans Church here in Cartersville, okay? And Jeans Church is what I'd call the church that wears jeans and has a praise team and no choir. And it's Jeans Church. You guys know what I'm talking about. You can go, if in Cartersville, I can go down the line and say, church, jeans church. Right? I'm not making a judgment. But one of this girl on the praise team, now she was married, she had a baby, so I don't like to call her a girl. She was young. Young enough where time had not ravaged her good looks. She was wearing a cleavage-bearing dress, and she was up there singing, and I'm looking and I'm like, that's not appropriate to wear up there, but I'm not going to say anything. This is Jean's church. The music minister should handle this. And one of the teenagers came over to me and said, hey, how about that woman over there? And I'm like, and I immediately chastised him. You shouldn't be looking at somebody like that. That's somebody's mother. Get your head straight. You're in church. So after chastising him, I went to the music minister and said, hey, you need to say something to so-and-so. She shouldn't dress like that. It's distracting the young men. Don't dress like that. So if my wife tried to leave the house in something like that to go to church, no chance. But my wife knows not to dress like that. It's not in her character. But my wife also knows it's about authority. If I tell her don't dress like that at church, I don't need to provide chapter and verse. I just say, that's not modest. Go change. She's not going to ask me for chapter and verse. She's going to say, that's my husband. He's an authority over me. I might not agree with this decision, but it's his decision, and I respect it, so I'm going to do what he says. The symbol of authority is on her, if you will, in a metaphorical way. But like I said, I rarely have to say anything to my wife. My wife doesn't get all gussied up. My wife doesn't even usually wear makeup. But she's really, I always have to add this. Really, really, really good looking. Absolute stunning woman in my life. But not big into getting all gussied up, which I think is nice. Anyway, I'm almost to Moe's. I think I'll do the show topic anyway, because it's the time is drawing near. There are churches closing for Christmas. Okay? Unacceptable. That's an absolutely unhealthy church. So this is me making a judgment. And I'm not being legalistic or pharisaical. I'm saying if your church closes for Christmas, it's unhealthy. Seth, that's pharisaical. Seth, people don't regard one day above another. Listen to me. I'm not saying a church has to meet on Sunday. I'm not saying that. Churches can meet on Wednesday. You can do worship on whatever day of the week you want. You know, Sunday's the Christian Sabbath because that was the day of the resurrection, and that's when the New Testament church started meeting. There's no thou shalt meet on Sunday in the New Testament. That's just how it happened. All right? The original Sabbath was Saturday. The Christian Sabbath is Sunday. How it works. If your church wants to meet on Saturday, fine. If your church wants to meet on Sunday, fine. If you have a church that's full of hairdressers and restaurant workers, and you want to meet on Monday, fine. Okay? But if your normal weekly or bi-weekly, for some country churches way out there in the sticks, if your normal day to meet for corporate worship is Sunday, and that's how it is for most churches, that is the day you have chosen to regard among others, okay, by the very nature of you meeting on Sunday, all right? So let's just take the any given church, ABC Baptist Church, that meets on Sunday, okay? That's the day they regard above and above. They cancel church. Is it okay to cancel church? Sometimes. What if it snows and the roads are dangerous and people can't get there? What if there's a tornado? What if the church is on fire? I mean, there are acceptable... What if there was a church picnic and everybody ate some bad potato salad and everybody's really sick with the flu? There are acceptable reasons to cancel church. If you're providentially hindered, you personally, if you're sick and you can't go to church, that's fine. I didn't go to church on Sunday because all three of my kids were sick. And I'm not going to take sick kids to church to get all the other kids sick. And I am their parent, so I had to stay home and take care of them. It's okay if your family is sick and you can't go to church. It's called being providentially hindered. It's okay for a church to cancel church if the church burnt down or something like that. You know, if the weather is too bad and it's dangerous for people to get out. That's okay. That's called being providentially hindered. It is not okay to cancel church for Christmas. Now, I've made some commentary about this at Pulpit and Pen and elsewhere. So, Seth, you're being realistic. And people are giving me all these reasons why it's okay to cancel church. Yes, I agree with you. There are times when you can cancel church. You don't have to meet on Sunday. I agree. But if a church has chosen to meet on Sunday for its regular worship, and the weather is fine, and not everybody is sick, and they cancel church for Christmas, that is a sign that the church is unhealthy. A couple of weeks ago, I called a friend of mine who's a pastor in town, and I said, "Hey, I heard the apostle so-and-so filled your pulpit. Do you think the apostle so-and-so is really an apostle?" And he said, "No, I don't think he's an apostle." You know, blah, blah, blah. And I was talking, I called him to get some information about that guy, because there's this guy going around Cartersville saying he's an apostle. And he has a church where it's a storefront church that he founded, and his wife is a pastor. You can imagine. So I was calling to get information on this guy because I'm going to confront this apostle and say, "You're not an apostle." And we've got to walk in there like Billy Bob Thornton in that movie, The Apostle, with Robert, what's the guy's name? Robert Duvall, and say, what kind of name is Apostle E.F.? I've never heard of anybody called Apostle E.F. That's a funny name, you know. I'm gonna go in there like Billy Bob Thornton and throw down. So I'm trying to get information on this guy. I'm metaphorically throw down. I'm not really going to get in a fight with the dude. And in the course of our conversation, he says, "Yeah, we've canceled church for Christmas, and we're going to do a recording, and people can watch it at home." I'm like, By the way, if your church is so unhealthy that an apostle filled the pulpit, I'm not surprised that you cancel church for Christmas. I'm not going to name the church because it's my friend. Maybe he'll snap out of it. But it's a sign that your church is unhealthy if you cancel church, operative word, for Christmas. Hey! It's the recognition of Jesus' birthday. So in recognition of Jesus' birthday, we're going to cancel church so we can stay at home and open presents, eat a big breakfast, and eat citrus fruit. Okay? I don't know about you guys, I always get apples and oranges in my stocking. Because 100 years ago, when my grandparents did Christmas and they were poor, what you got for Christmas was an orange and a candy cane. Right? There were no Nintendo. You didn't get Ninja Turtles. You got an orange and a candy cane. And that was a big deal. You didn't just get oranges. I'm driving by Kroger. I could buy Kroger out of oranges and have money left over now. Ha, ha, ha. We're so prosperous in America. But back in the day, you got an orange. So I always get an orange or a tangerine in my stocking. And it's like, it's always really special because the orange is in my stocking. Does this happen to you guys? It's like, wow, I got a tangerine. And it's like a big deal. It's like, I can get a tangerine anytime I want. But it's something special about getting it in your Christmas stocking. So everybody's going to be home eating tangerines and candy canes and opening up Ninja Turtles and enjoying, quote unquote, time with their families. All right. We don't want to take away time from your family for church. Do you see the problem there? That's idolatry. You're making an idol out of the secularization of Christmas. Can you not wait to open your presents until later? Can you not go to church? Like, we usually eat Christmas dinner at my mom's house and my dad's house for about 1 or 2 o'clock over at my parents', right? But this year, we're going to eat at 4 or 5. Why? Because my family has to come from Noonan, which is 2 hours away, and they have to go to church first before they come here. That's what we're doing this year because my family, we're church people, and we go to church. My church, I'm new there, but I know they wouldn't dream of canceling church on Christmas. Are things different? Yeah, we're not going to have Sunday school this week. Why? We're not going to have childcare because, you know, some people are going to be away traveling. But we're going to get together and have a service. We're going to come together and worship the Lord. It's Sunday. It's the Lord's Day. I can't believe people are having to argue about this like I am now, but it's happening. For real. For realsies, y'all. So here's the thing. If you have a friend who goes to a church that is canceling services on Christmas for Christmas, and I don't care if they're saying, well, we're going to have a Christmas Eve service. No. If they're canceling church for Christmas, I'm looking you dead in the eye. I haven't been to your church. I don't know who the pastor is. You have an unhealthy church. Because somehow spending time with family or not having a full house is more important than meeting on the Lord's Day to worship the Lord on Jesus' birthday. Okay, I know it's not really his birthday, but that's what Christmas is. It's a blessing that we only get every 4 or 5 years to have Christmas on a Sunday. Why in the world would we cancel? Why in the world would you do that? But that's a sign of having an unhealthy church. And people might say, well, we rely so much on volunteer labor and, you know, oh, is your church so big that you don't have enough parking attendants where people can meet? Can you not do without parking attendants and trolley drivers this week? Well, you know, this is blah, blah, blah. I know people are traveling. All right, and they're out of town. So you may have church members who are away visiting family. Hey, let me tell you this. My church covenant says if we're out of town, we're supposed to look for another church to go to. We were out of town Sunday, and what did I do? I started looking at all the local Baptist churches to pick one to go to. We had one picked out to go to in Murfreesboro. We didn't go because the kids got sick. But if you're out of town, according to my church's church covenant, you're supposed to find another church to go to. It's not like it's spring break. You go to Panama City and you're taking spring break from church. That's not how it works. You're supposed to find a church to go to. Okay? So yes, half of your church may be out of town traveling for Christmas. But theoretically, half of your church members would have people in church come to town visiting them, so they should go to church together. And I just can't imagine a church where every single person is out of town, okay? The pastor's sick. Cancel church. Okay, it's Christmas. Cancel church. No. 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 Do not cancel church for Christmas. And if your leadership team, quote unquote, by the way, churches with leadership teams are the ones that cancel church on Christmas. Churches with pastors don't do it. What's the difference, Seth? It's the same thing, but it's how they refer to it. Secular business churches on a modern model, I'm speaking generally here, I'm hitting 99%, not 100%, the leadership team has decided to cancel Christmas. All right. If your leadership team has done that, because I don't think your pastor has. If your leadership team has done that and you say, why have we canceled church for Christmas? They really don't have a good argument for it. Well, you need to spend time with your family. Well, as the leader of my family, I think it's important to bring them to church to worship the Lord on the Lord's Day. That's been a good example for my family. I'm telling my kids that it's more important to stay home and open presents than it is to go to church. God's secondary. Our church family is secondary. I feel like Charlie Brown and Charlie Brown Christmas when they're commercializing Christmas. All right, I'm in the Moe's parking lot. I've got to stop. Don't stand. Do not stand for Christmas to be canceled at your church. And you know what? 99% of my listeners are probably like, it would never cancel Christmas at my church. But I know there are some of you out there, at least two. I would deal with that if I were you. Buddy, I'm not your pastor. I'm not in charge. You can manage your own families. But sorry. How about this? Genuinely, deeply sorry if that's happened to you. And do your best to make sure it doesn't happen to your church again. Next year, I'm at Moe's. I'm going to meet my wife. Thanks for listening to the Christian Commute. We'll skip the catechism today. God bless you, and Lord willing, we'll be back tomorrow.
You have been listening to The Christian Commute. Thank you for taking the time to listen. Make sure to join Seth for another ride as he explores God's work and his kingdom.